My message today is indeed a Pentecost message, which you might not expect at this service. The title is Pentecost Lessons, Truth in the Non-Factual. So for Christians, today is Pentecost, and it's a day when Christians recount the story of the Spirit coming to the followers of Jesus 50 days after Jesus' tomb is found empty. And Penta actually means 50 is where it comes from. So I am asking you to be a little patient with me today, being that I am a Christian minister and being that Pentecost is a pretty big day in Christianity. Some even incorrectly call it the birthday of the church. I'd like to spend a little bit of time today talking about the Pentecost story. Hopefully, my take on the story will resonate with you spiritually, if only in a small way, but hopefully it will be resonating with you maybe in a slightly deeper way. It's really, truly, Pentecost is a wild and unbelievable story. As a matter of fact, to our modern day minds, it is very unbelievable. The reality is, at least in my mind, it probably isn't entirely factual. However, I also have to say, in my mind, it is true. It's a story that tells the tale of how a small, marginalized, fearful group of followers of a wandering rabbi were scared to death about being associated with him for fear of being rounded up and crucified just like him. How they stopped hiding in the shadows and began living by his teachings. See, I would argue that at its core, this less than factual story is about how a group of people decided to live into their beliefs, to live their lives on fire, to actually live as though they believed in and valued the lessons that wandering rabbi taught them. It's a story about finding the courage to risk being who they are. In times like these, that's certainly a valuable lesson, regardless of how factual the story is. Risking being who we are. Here's the story very briefly as it's written in Acts. And suddenly from heaven there came a sound like rushing wind and a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting, and divided tongues of fire appeared among them, and a tongue rested on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages as the Spirit gave them ability. As I said, it's very hard for our modern minds to think of that as true in any way, and it's probably not literal, but I would argue that there is much truth in it. Of course, no one really knows what happened in the room that day. Personally, I don't think that tongues of fire actually appeared on anyone's head, and I also don't happen to think that people started talking in strange languages. My guess is that those things are simply meant to be understood as metaphors. If I had to venture a guess about that day and the events leading up to it, I'd probably say that their teacher's death, because of it, they were very afraid and they were probably a bit lost. And at that point, being associated with him would have definitely been scary, not to mention very dangerous. I assume that they were probably wondering what in the world would happen to them next. So, they gathered together in an upper room and hid. Then, I imagine, like folks do when a loved one passes, as they were hiding, they probably spent a lot of time talking to each other about what Jesus and his teachings meant to them. Now, it wouldn't be that big of a leap at that point to see that they probably started recalling Jesus' stories and his interactions with others. Thinking about things like how much better things would be if they themselves practiced turning the other cheek or taking the log out of their eye before trying to take the speck out of someone else's. About how when you feed the hungry and visit the sick and clothe the naked, you're doing it not just for God, but you're doing it for each other. In my mind's eye, they probably thought about how exciting and how positive life was when they were with him and following his teachings. And then they probably thought about what life was like now that they were holed up inside of four walls with trepidation about things that were going on in the world. I like to think that they realized that even though they very much enjoyed each other's companies and the activities that they shared within those four walls, that they wanted more out of life than that, and that they wanted more for the world than that. I like to think that they realized that following Jesus' teachings of love and equality required action. And somehow, they found the courage to do it. I suspect that that's when people started noticing them too. That they began to live differently. They became the people who welcomed and embraced outcasts. They became people who took care of the sick and fed the hungry and clothed the naked. They sold their possessions and together they held things in common. Admittedly, nowadays, most traditional Christians would probably call them communist or socialist. But maybe that's something we all should aspire to. In short, for their day and age, they were radical. They included women and slaves and the most despised people in their society. And they didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves people of the way. They were seen as the ones who lived differently. Maybe we should aspire to that too. So, what does all of this have to do with progressive spirituality? Well, hopefully some of it's obvious, but I want to be specific about part of it. There is a sort of Pentecost movement rippling through Christianity and other religions, particularly in the progressive wings. The proverbial fire that ignited those first disciples seems to be putting a fire under folks nowadays as well. More and more folks are thinking about what it means to live life every day in a way that can change individual lives and change the world. Folks seem to be figuring out that their spirituality is not about going to church, it's about being the church, or more precisely, being what the church is supposed to be in the world. Love. In formalized religion, this movement is called the missional movement. The idea is for institutions, specifically the people within them, to stop spending so much time and energy on advertising and trying to attract people to join their congregations, and instead to start spending time going out into the world. It's not unlike the early Christian communities did after their Pentecost experience as they spread the teachings of Jesus by living them out in their everyday life. In many ways, it's not surprising that we've ended up here. You see, in general, the church has become synonymous with the larger dominant culture. It's become an arm and an agent of the corporate consumer culture in which we live, as well as a tool of conservative politics. The missional movement sees being a follower of the way as an extraordinarily counter-culture way of leading life. If the church is to be an organization that takes seriously the teachings of Jesus, it should not have any part in the status quo. It should not support or practice the modern consumer-driven mindset. It should be in the margins of society, not only calling out for love, equality, and compassion, but being a living example of what love, quality, and compassion looks like. One of the fascinating things about living a missional life together is that it breaks down barriers between people of all different faiths and spiritual perspectives, when our primary focus is love, equality, and compassion, the other differences seem to fade away into the background. Why someone is practicing love, equality, and compassion seems at that point much less important than the fact that they are practicing love, equality, and compassion. The interesting thing is, once you start practicing this missional style of life, it's very difficult to ever go back again. Your life changes. Being the change you wish to see in the world is self-reinforcing. Catching the missional spirit means seeing that everything you thought that you knew about life and church and religion could be wrong. And once you see life as a mission, you just can't see it being anything else but that. When spiritual organizations take on a missional outlook, it provides them with the opportunity for the communities they exist in to see them for how they live, not what they profess to believe. The story of Pentecost, while not factual, certainly should challenge spiritual people. It should challenge us. It should challenge us to live out what we say we believe so powerfully and so completely that we are seen as a people who live differently. Not just the people who think and believe differently, but actually live differently. In the Pentecost story, fire appeared among the people, but the reality is that people living the precepts of love, equality, and compassion out in their lives are their own fire. And frequently, those behaviors will cause others to catch fire, to become passionate about living life that way. So, is the Pentecost story factual? I very seriously doubt it. But it does contain a lot of truth. And the truth is that living life holed up inside of four walls pales in comparison to living a life on fire for love, equality, and compassion. And living lives that focus on love, equality, and compassion has a way of not only improving the world around us, but it has a way of improving our own spiritual lives as well.